From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Who are you gonna call? Those guys who sometimes get the ghosts.
We all float down here, Richie. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're gonna talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Tonight, it's Tuesday, July 12th, 2011.
This is show 115.
And I want to open today with one of the tweet questions, because I think it's really germane.
Oh yeah, let's jump right into it.
This is from BernieB223, and they have asked how you come up with good podcast topics and how hard it is to come up with good ones at times.
Yeah. Got an answer? Because I sure don't have one right now.
There's your answer right there. We are podcasting under protest tonight.
Podcasting under protest is immediately a front runner for the title of this episode.
Just know that we are going to entertain you, but tonight we honestly don't give a fuck. Just gonna put that out there. I have some notes. They're all kind of conventional stuff. Some really great suggestions from Twitter tonight that we're probably going to shit all over.
Yeah, sure.
Where do you want to start? How about wrapping up Convergence, since that's sort of a thing that we
Sure. We performed at Convergence Con. That's its real name.
And there's your wrap-up of Convergence. No, we had a spectacular time.
No, we had a wonderful time. Very friendly people, a lot of costumes, very very high I mean, I guess that's sort of what one of the things that's built around. Not all cons are filled with geeks dressed up as other geeks, but some more than others. This one had a very high concentration of people dressed up as things.
The really impressive thing to me was the number of costumes over the time we were there was probably 5 times the number of people who attended. Like, it seemed like there were a lot of people who, like, laid out by half day their costumes, which was pretty awesome. So it was like a never-ending Halloween parade, which I guess is the effect they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
So it was spectacular. I did not achieve the goal of 1,000 pictures with cosplayers over the weekend.
Or more to the point, pictures with 1,000 cosplayers.
Correct. And the deal was honest pictures and not just, hey, I'm standing in a balcony and there's 1,000 cosplayers below me.
That's exactly how you would say it, too.
That's how I talked the whole weekend long, and it was awesome. In fact, I think I barely cleared 2 dozen.
But they were a really good 2 dozen pictures.
They were, just that, I don't know, I guess I blurted it out on the last podcast because sort of, it's like, what do you do at a con? I mean, obviously, there are tons of things to do at a con, but as sort of, I don't know, as guests, it's sort of weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
There are things I'm interested in, but usually not enough to fill out all of my time. You know?
Yeah, I mean, well, like, cons are filled with enthusiasts. I mean, you know, for the most part, anybody who is attending a particular con is doing so specifically because they have a great enthusiasm for the topic or topics covered. And while we certainly have an interest and are enthusiastic about a number of the things that go on at conventions, I wouldn't normally call myself a convention guy. Like, I enjoy being at them, and I like to walk around for a little while and see the awesome costumes people have made up. But, like, I don't build my whole weekend around being around all these costumes and all this activity. I'm not denigrating it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's not my particular yen. To go do that, like, you know, super intensively.
Here's an angle on it. And I think for me, we feel sort of the same thing. And it's not just cons, but it's a social thing in general. And here's what I'm going to posit. Or I'll say this. You and I, we're both introverts.
Yeah, oddly enough.
Right. And that's the angle here, is that type of thing, like saying, I'm going to take pictures with cosplayers, is a way to, it's a safe way to do social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's sort of understood there's a convention, you know, I'm taking a picture with you, and, you know, it could become social or not. Either way, it's sort of, it's safe.
Yeah.
So, but the topic is, I don't remember who I was chatting about this with, but people have a perception that performers of all sorts must be extroverts. Like, wow, you're up on stage and you're jumping around, or you're playing the tuba, or... you're a mime, you know, the things you usually think of as being performers. You think that person must be so outgoing, such an extrovert. And I would posit that more performers, especially musicians, are really introverts. Not all, certainly.
Yeah. Funny you mention that, because I was going to say, a lot of times at these types of events and at most sort of social occasions, I always sort of feel kind of like an anthropologist.
Yeah.
Like, I'm interested in what's going on, but I feel like I'm sort of at the periphery of it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not necessarily an outsider, but certainly at the periphery. And then we were on stage with Jonathan, mm-hmm. in Amsterdam specifically, and he was introducing his song, was it Big Bad World 1, I guess?
Yeah.
The one where he always talks about feeling awkward at parties. And he said a thing that actually very much surprised me, although... Even though I know, you know, we know from having hung out with him a while, he's very much the same kind of sort of introvert as mm-hmm. we are.
Yep.
And he talked about how, like, regularly when he goes to parties, he and his wife always experience the same thing where, you know, they'll show up at a party and meet people and grab a drink. And within 10 minutes, nobody else is talking to them.
Yeah.
And you know, amen. I totally mm-hmm. hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it sort of surprised me, because I always thought of Colton, introvert that he is, as a bit more sort of able to surf the party scene a little better. You know, kind of like Hodgman. I've never seen a nerd sort of work a room the way Hodgman can work a room.
Well, he just has the natural gift.
He does.
But Hodgman is not a musician. He is musical to some uh-huh. degree, but he's not a musician. And I think that sort of, for me, like, you become a musician or an artist, like visual arts. I think a lot of the time people do that because it's the only way they feel it's safe to express themselves, like huh. sort of in a normal context, like socializing, for whatever reason. I think there are probably a million different reasons why. But I know, like, writing for me early on was something that it was a way for me to communicate what I was actually feeling and not feel like, you know, it was going to be weird or you're going to get shut down and like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, this is skirting dangerously close to actual content, so I think we need to veer off and get into something a little
okay.
more frivolous.
Well, I have a thank you then.
Okay.
Speaking of the awkwardness, thank you to Joseph Scrimshaw, a friend of ours who is an absolute prince at Convergence.
He's the king of Convergence.
Yeah, I'll say king, and a prince of a guy. And yeah. that, especially that first night, helped show me around the con. It was like the Fat Albert gang, kind of all glommed together and hoking on down the circuit.
I love that image. I think you guys, for next Convergence that we go to, you guys all have to go dressed up as Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids.
All right, Joseph, if you're listening, get everyone together, and I get to be Mushmouth.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm gonna be Rudy.
Yeah. There we go. Now we're out of real content zone.
Yeah.
Oh, and thank you to the folks at Toast. That thing I loved, one of the things I love the most about it is it's not food focused per se, but there's a lot of food to be had, and you can just drift into these places and get food. And one of them, they have like 99 different toppings you can put on toast. And I created the Storm Toast, which was pretty special. So thank you for that. All right.
Yeah. So, and a thank you to everyone there at Convergence. We had a wonderful time and were treated wonderfully. So there's that.
Oh, yes, we were. Yes. So I've got some kind of normally things. We can go into the Twittery stuff.
You know what? I have a little Twitter thing. Interestingly enough, I was just looking at this topic, I would say, about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Valderia mm-hmm. has suggested we talk about VY Canis Majoris, or Canis Majoris. I don't know my Latin pronunciation well enough, which is the largest known star in the universe.
I was not familiar until it now. Was, I'm a little ashamed of that.
I saw it. I think it was off of a Reddit discussion. There's a chart, sort of, you know, increasing scale of the universe chart, where it shows you sort of the size of the moon next to the Earth, and the size of the Earth next to, say, Jupiter, and then the size of Jupiter next to the Sun.
Right.
And then, you know, and it sort of keeps increasing in scale like that, and it keeps comparing it to larger and larger celestial bodies. And the biggest, the king shit of Universe Mountain, the biggest dude on the block is this star VY Canis Majoris. And it is somewhere between 600 to 2100 times the size of our sun.
I'm calling bullshit, and I'll tell you why.
Go ahead, tell me why.
Because nothing can be bigger than our sun, because it's our sun.
Oh, you know, that is true. That is, and it is the biggest thing which revolves around us, because all the stars are tiny.
Correct.
They're teeny little twinkles in the sky.
That's what science tells us. And, you know, it's fine if you want to disagree with science, but our sun is the biggest object in the universe.
Well, then let me spin this tale of fancy.
Sure, please do.
I'm just looking off the Wikipedia, just because I get fascinated by things of scale that sort of go beyond what you can possibly comprehend. I mean, it's, you feel like you can sort of comprehend when somebody says 600 to 2100 times the sun, you know, that, you know, you can think of 2100 of something.
Sure.
But then when you see a number like the actual size of it is estimated at just over 3 trillion meters.
So would it basically, if this thing actually existed, could you, like, would it, its circumference be greater than our solar system, say?
No, actually, interestingly, it lists it here in the Wikipedia. Actually, if it were in the center of our solar system, its circumference would reach out, I think it's just to or beyond the orbit of Saturn.
Well, that's not a big deal.
Neptune and Uranus just became balmy vacation spots.
Yeah, and I guess we're crispy critters.
Yeah. But I absolutely love just trying to even ponder the imponderable like that.
That, you know, reminds me of the most weird fever dream I ever had. And it was exactly that. And it's not going to make a lot of sense, because it was more of a feeling than a thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was a fever dream. Like, I was like 11 years old, and I had a fever of like 103 when I woke up. So this was truly out of your mind stuff. But I have like this piece of paper and a pencil, and some force thing, voice, whatever, told me all I had to do to get up from this desk or wherever I was to draw a circle. No problem, you know, it's this little piece of paper. So I'm drawing a circle. It's this perfectly round circle, as perfect as you can imagine. And I'm not a real artist, so it's hard to draw straight like that, especially at 11. And just as I was about to complete the circle, all of a sudden, the paper and the whole universe just expanded to this impossibly wide, like, I was no longer, you know, looking down at the circle, you know. I was sort of somewhere on its edge, and its edges went out into infinity. And I just thought, oh, fuck, you know?
I love that that's your initial reaction.
Yeah, it was, oh, fuck, how am I going to complete the circle? And then after I'd sort of relaxed and said, well, I guess it'll happen, it went back to being on the paper again. But then it was the Sisyphus thing, where every time I went to complete the circle, it would expand out like a big honking star.
Right.
So that's why I call bullshit on the big star.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, fine. Doesn't exist. Storm says so.
Nope.
That was easy.
I have a recommend. So you may have recommended it at one point.
Okay.
Phineas and Ferb.
Yes. Oh, now you've joined the cult.
Yeah, this is something that you lobbied me very hard, not on Phineas and Ferb, but like Venture Brothers.
Yeah.
This was way back when. This was like still the first season.
Yeah.
And then I watched it and I loved it. Phineas and Ferb, you never lobbied me. Like, you talked about it.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think I just mentioned it, but.
And we're going to be going to see, speaking of doing stuff at cons, at Comic-Con, we are fortunate enough to be going to the Phineas and Ferb panel. Not on it or anything, from our friends.
We know people.
Yeah, you'll leave it at that. And Tom Cruise. Okay, I said it. But yeah, and the thing that I love about it, of course...
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Phineas and Ferb is a cartoon on the Disney Channel. That is, it's one of those cartoons where it's not specifically pitched to adults, but it's a kid's cartoon that is palatable for grown-ups.
And I think it's a cliche for us, like anything that we really like, we'll generally say it's well-written, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody kind of does that. But it is, just in terms of, it's not your usual, okay, just churn it out for the kids on a formula.
Yeah.
But the thing that I love about it the most is that you don't, unlike some other cartoons that older folks have glommed onto, you don't have to watch it ironically to enjoy it.
Or stoned.
Or be stoned. Like, it's just pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
And you don't feel guilty that you are watching something that ostensibly is produced for children.
I would put it in the category of, or the same category as Avatar The Last Airbender, which is one, the next one I have to lobby you for, by the way. But as far as cartoons ostensibly written for younger people, you know, certainly younger than adults, but that can have great appeal for adults and something you should, not be ashamed to enjoy as an adult.
And there's one character detail that I think is especially, or character dynamic that I think is especially nice,
mm-hmm.
and that is that Phineas, who is the main protagonist,
yeah,
he has sort of a I wouldn't even call it puppy love, but a regular love interest, a member of the opposite sex, that they have a relationship of some sort.
Yeah, a young lady certainly seems to have sort of a crush on him.
Yes, but that they treat it like it's not a big deal, in the sense that it seems healthy and it doesn't get caught up in the cliches.
Yeah, it's not like the show revolves around or hinges on the relationship between the male and female characters there.
No, it just seems like a nice, healthy relationship.
And it's just funny. The show's just flat out funny. There's no other way to describe it.
Okay.
So there's Moving on.
So we could go kind of topical, or we can go to something totally arcane.
Oh, go with your heart, Storm.
Oh, I have no heart.
You have no heart. Okay, I'll do a little bit of house cleaning. Joko Cruise Crazy 2, you all have been waiting very patiently. Very patiently, we appreciate that. There is a new batch of cabin inventory coming out very soon. We are hoping by the end of this week. Again, we can't have an absolute solid date yet, but we are very, very close. We keep inching closer. We just want to make sure. We keep wanting to make sure we have everything possibly that could go wrong taken care of and shored up against. So thank you again, all of you who have exhibited such patience, and many more people will be able to come on our cruise with us very soon. There, got that out of the way.
I have a battle.
Okay, battle. Hit me with a battle.
This is based on a question from Sierra Hauk. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Okay.
Now, she asked, the battle is based on her question, but her question was, essentially, given the choice between TARDIS and DeLorean, which would you seek as a time machine? And I think that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, TARDIS. And
is there anybody that would choose the DeLorean given that choice?
No, I mean,
John DeLorean would not choose the DeLorean.
And in the final analysis, he rejected the DeLorean.
Yeah.
So I think that's accurate. When you consider all the crap that they had to go through in the Back to the Future movies just to get the damn thing to go back or forward in time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, the TARDIS, it has its moments where it can be a little finicky. But no question. But the battle is still TARDIS and DeLorean. But if you're going to recommend one or the other for someone to pick up women in Alabama.
Ooh.
Which one?
See, I was all set to go till you said Alabama.
Yep. Because no doubt, if you're in San Francisco or Boston or London, certainly, you know.
Yep.
The TARDIS is going to do the trick.
You know what? I'm going to have to go the obvious answer, but I'm going to have to go with DeLorean.
Do you think?
I think so. because I think you would have a tough time getting you know, and again, of course, we're grossly exaggerating for the purpose of entertainment here, but I think you would have a tough time getting any female in the state of Alabama to get into the TARDIS, which is the only way you can impress them with it, is by showing them how it's bigger on the inside.
That's correct.
What do I win?
Well, I mean, no, you're correct about... I'm not saying that that's the correct answer, just that you're correct that it would be difficult to get someone into that box. I mean, it would seem kind of creepy, you know, especially, you know, someone like you or I.
Yeah.
not that we're proposing that.
We are particularly creepy individuals.
Oh, God, we're creepy. But I don't know if the DeLorean, it would look kind of, if it would necessarily... be that attractive, but I guess compared to a large blue wooden police box, that it would probably be more attractive. Okay, well, that settles that.
Okay.
Let's see.
Here's a question. Yeah. You have today is the day that A Dance with Dragons came out, and I saw that you have purchased it. Have you read any of it yet?
I am dancing.
Now, I actually, I'm not usually a person to do this, but I have a pile of various projects and tasks and things that I have to get through between now and the end of the month. And I am actually denying myself the purchase of Dance with Dragons until I get through this stuff. Not in a moral, like, I will reward myself with this book sense, but more because I know if I buy it, I will just sit down and read it cover to cover and not get anything else done.
Yeah, I'm pretty much taking off tomorrow to read it. I mean, I also have a lot of things that I have to do.
Yeah.
But it's, I just cannot stand knowing anything before diving into something like this.
I'm gonna have a tough time staying spoiler free on this one, I think, but I'm gonna do my damnedest.
And this isn't at all a spoiler, but it's really hard, especially after having watched the HBO series where it takes you back to the beginning, to remember all the crap that happened.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like your brain gets doused with different chemicals during each book, you know, and it's sort of watching the HBO series wiped out the etchings of the last chemical wash from the fourth book. So it's kind of hard, but it always was to get back in. And certainly I wasn't gonna, you know, read 2,500 pages just so I can pick right up where I left off. Not that it doesn't do a good job of reminding you.
Here is the important question, though.
Yep.
How many pages would you say you're into the book so far?
Only 50 or 60.
Okay. Have we had our first Hodor sighting in those 50 or 60 pages yet?
I don't want to put any spoilers out there. I'll just term it as Hodor, the word has not been spoken. I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. I got to get my Hodor on, man.
You can always get your Hodor on.
I suppose that is true.
There's no limits to Hodor.
Yeah. Get your Hodor on is another frontrunner, by the way.
Yeah.
You know what? I think maybe we should cut this one off short.
I was thinking that, too. You know, I've enjoyed this. We did kind of force ourselves to talk today.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it was genuine. It was from the heart. From the heart,
forced. Meant it. It was forced and squeezed from the heart.
How about just one more? One more. One more.
Okay. This better be good.
Nah, fuck it then. Okay.
Seriously, did you have one in mind, or you just wanted to do another thing?
Well, it was sort of. Pervil asks about the perfect tuna sandwich.
Ugh.
And that's exactly what I thought you would say. So they're gonna have to wait for that answer.
Tuna fish. Slice of bread, other slice of bread, spread evenly. How's that?
I like vinegar in my tuna fish.
Vinegar in the tuna fish. There.
Done and done. You'll get our real answer another time.
That was worth 40 seconds.
Where are we going to be, Paul?
We're going to be at Woodstock on July 21st.
Oh, yeah.
with a whole bunch of people.
And a whole bunch we can't tell you about.
Yeah, a whole bunch we aren't telling you about yet, and a whole bunch that we have told you about. You go to Woodstock.net to see the details on that. It's going to be awesome. Tickets still available. We are also, I believe it's official, and if it's not, I'm going to go back and edit this, but I believe we are officially announced that we're going to be back at PAX Prime this year.
I believe it has become official, yes.
So that's happening. We are also going to be down at Dragon Con for the first time in, I think, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a show at the Variety Playhouse with Jonathan Colton, which is his CD release party, by the way.
I cannot wait to get that CD.
That's going
to
be awesome. And we're also doing a show at Dragon Con on the Saturday night.
I literally can't wait. I'm probably going to write him and ask him if I can get an advance copy.
That's right, because you cannot wait.
I can't.
Waiting is not an option. So there'll be a Saturday night show with us and Jonathan and other special guests. Those are all going to be awesome. We're working on some awesome stuff for the fall. Nothing in place yet, but watch this space. We have, how many minions we have at this point? I think it's
exactly 418.
Yeah, exactly 418, approaching that magic stoner number. You can be a cool ever dude. Hello.
Yes, we cut out for a second there.
No, you cut out.
It's the Skype cut out. Blah, 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 blah. Go to paulinstorm.com to find out more about how to become part of the Brigade of Minions, details on gigs, the 24 pictures that I did manage to take with cosplayers at Convergence. Oh, and I forgot to mention that. The project is extended to Comic-Con and to PAX. I am still determined.
And Dragon Con.
And, oh, God, especially Dragon Con. That's the density of costumes there is incredible.
That's where you make up the difference, whatever your shortfall is.
But go to paulinstorm.com for all of that, especially for the Brigade of Minions.
Yeah. And until that time...
I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Ho door.
Go do things.